You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart.
So don't tell me about China. I know China.
China. I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
I don't know where to begin.
A Yale Daily News poll shows 82% of students support Kamala Harris in the United States election. It comes as conservative commentator Ben Shapiro launched his nationwide college speaking tour at Yale earlier this week. The United States has also been recently hit by Hurricane Helene, which killed 227 people. Florida is now bracing for Hurricane Milton, a Category 5 hurricane expected to cause major damage. For State of the States, I spoke to Andre Fausso from the Yale Daily News about recent events on the Yale campus and the political implications of the hurricanes. Why was Ben Shapiro speaking at Yale?
So Ben Shapiro was at Yale on Monday, or October 7th, which was the first anniversary of the Hamas-led attack on Israel, which stemmed the beginning of Israel's war on Gaza. The discussion was led by the Buckley Institute, which is a conservative think tank slash political group at Yale. He spoke about the Israel-Gaza war and his perception of how it has impacted campus politics and also political discourses in the United States, particularly on university campuses, since this was what this tour is about. His first stop was Yale. He is proceeding on to the University of California, Los Angeles, then Cornell University, and then Vanderbilt, which all of them had quite increased activity and also campus protests and activism regarding Israel's war on Gaza. He also spoke about other issues, particularly the war in Ukraine, and he also briefly touched on racial politics and abortion in the United States.
Did Shapiro discuss the US election?
The focus of the discussion wasn't on the election. However, he did bring up key consequential issues that are core discussions within the current election climate. So, although the election wasn't discussed per se, there were issues that are very central to the election that he did bring up.
He's a controversial figure. What are the issues that drive his controversial rhetoric?
Well, he is a conservative commentator who has profited off of his perspectives. Shapiro has spent considerable time and energy both on his own media platform and others spreading his perspectives on consequential issues in the United States and elsewhere, particularly on campus politics, the Israel-Hamas war, the Ukraine conflict, and other foreign policy issues, including immigration in the United States, and also the current state of racial politics and abortion politics in the US. His discussions are often based on pro-conservative and pro-Trump positions on racial politics, women's rights, the economy, and foreign relations. He's one of many right-wing conservative commentators who have generated a significant following, but also a considerable amount of reverence within the current American political psyche.
New statistics have revealed who Yale students are supporting this election. What do they tell us?
So the Yale Daily News sent out a survey to voters on campus a couple of weeks ago, and the data has come out. Of more than 900 respondents, it was found that support for Kamala Harris is overwhelmingly strong, at 82% of respondents saying that they would be voting for her in the upcoming election. A majority of Yale students surveyed, nearly two-thirds, positioned themselves as liberal, although surprisingly more than a quarter of respondents are currently unaffiliated, which is quite interesting and speaks to some of the remaining uncertainty that young voters have regarding who they are loyal to and satisfied with as their next presidential nominee.
Could this be indicative of national trends?
It isn't any myth that American college campuses are not left-wing strongholds, but do predominantly tend to lean left. And that goes to the more educated, but also diverse nature of college campuses in the United States. It would be interesting to see how a post-affirmative action climate continues to change the demographics and thus the political perspectives of campuses in the United States. But with in terms of national trends, the survey that the Yale Daily News did, however, there were a majority, an overwhelmingly strong majority of students that voted for Harris, you could say that the overall trend would be indicative or indicated across other campuses in the US.
How many people have been impacted by Hurricane Helene in the United States and now could be impacted by Hurricane Milton?
Millions of people in states in the South, particularly North Carolina, South Carolina and Florida, have been heavily affected by the onslaught of hurricanes in recent weeks. Now, millions of Floridians are being displaced by Hurricane Milton, which is expected to make landfall on the west coast of Florida near Tampa this evening and into tomorrow morning. People have been encouraged to evacuate in the wake of the hurricane, and despite it not making landfall just yet, its significant size meant it has already brought adverse weather conditions to Florida. Heavy rain is expected across the entire state, with flooding and strong winds upwards of 200 kilometres per hour expected in Milton's direct path.
What has made these hurricanes so bad?
Well, across experts and discussions amongst politicians and the media is that unequivocally climate change has been attributed to fueling the hurricanes that have caused such intense damage to the southeast and southern United States. Record ocean surface temperatures have provided conditions for these hurricanes to gain significant size and energy in such a short period of time. Hurricane Milton has raised strong concerns and is understood to be one of the strongest hurricanes to hit Florida in more than a century. It was upgraded from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in less than 12 hours, and that's indicative of the conditions on the ocean surface which enable these weather events to grow in such energy and size. It has fluctuated between Category 4 and 5 status, and it is expected to make landfall in Florida with Category 4 status and winds. In returning to Helene, more than 227 people have died so far, emphasizing that there is still significant risk to life that these hurricanes pose, particularly the risk of flooding and swells. Flooding of up to 3 to 4.5 meters will be expected as a result of Hurricane Milton within the coming hours.
What has the political response to the hurricanes been?
Well, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, in the wake of Hurricane Milton, has been firm on ensuring that Floridians evacuate from areas that are expected to be heavily affected. However, relations between the Republican governor and the Biden administration have somewhat soured in the wake of Kamala Harris's dual role as both acting vice president and the Democratic nominee for president. Kamala Harris has called Ron DeSantis earlier this week, intending to discuss the dispersal of aid and federal support. However, DeSantis refused to take Harris's call, telling media that Harris's attempt to reach out to him was purely politically motivated. Kamala Harris came out and criticized Ron DeSantis for his leadership, saying that any true leader during a crisis would put politics aside and put the people first. Donald Trump and other Republican figures who have their names on the ballot this upcoming election have taken the opportunity to politicize and weaponize the federal government's response to these hurricanes, particularly in a bid to discredit Kamala Harris and her ability to both respond and handle crises. Kamala Harris has called out widespread misinformation around these hurricanes and their severity. One abstract claim that I've seen floated on social media is that the Biden administration has used weather manipulation technology to create these hurricanes and make them hit predominantly red states and swing states. Although there has been no evidence that this is the case, and it is widely acknowledged among experts and journalists that climate change has been the key driver of the severity of these weather events.
Could the hurricanes impact the election in affected states?
North Carolina's election board has provided flexibility for voters in regions that have been heavily affected by Hurricane Helene. Georgia has also made their voting changes and accommodations to ensure that people still have the opportunity to vote, considering that Helene made a very strong trajectory into the southern states, which also happen to be very pivotal swing states in this upcoming election. People displaced by these events would by now be more concerned about getting their lives back together than voting. So I'm sure that this flexibility is to ensure that people who have been affected have time and the opportunity to vote if they haven't yet. However, the impact on voter turnout has yet to be determined, with less than 4 weeks away until Election Day. It'll also be interesting to see how, in the wake of Hurricane Milton, whether Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida Election Board decide to implement any ongoing accommodations for people who are directly affected or have been displaced due to the recent weather events.
I also spoke to honorary academic at the University of Auckland Faculty of Science and climate scientist Dr. Kevin Trenberth about Hurricanes Helene and Milton. Trenberth worked at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado as a climate scientist in the climate analysis section for 36 years. I began the interview asking him how concerning a Category 5 storm is with regards to Hurricane Milton.
Well, that's the most extreme category. It did drop down to Category 4, and currently I believe it's at Category 3. So it's up and down a little bit. Part of the weakening may be because it's running into Florida, running into the land, and the land tends to slow down the winds a little bit and has an influence, because these storms are driven by the heat from, latent heat released from precipitation. So that original heat comes from the ocean. High sea surface temperatures and high ocean temperatures below the surface fuel the storm through all of the moisture, and when the moisture condenses in rainfall, it leads to rising air and helps to spin up the storm. And so that's where the fuel comes from. And so if it runs into land, there's less moisture available. So also the friction of land, all of the obstacles on land tend to slow down the winds. And so maybe that's already what is happening. But nonetheless, there's likely to be a strong storm surge when it makes landfall close to noon today, New Zealand time, I would guess.
Can you explain how these storms become more supercharged? How was Milton able to reach a Category 5 strength so quickly?
So the sea temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico have been at record high levels at over 30 degrees Celsius, and the water below the surface is also at unprecedented levels. I mean, this has been a trend. It's not unexpected. It's been breaking records year after year for at least 10 years now, maybe 15 years, since Katrina in 2005, for instance. And we have written a number of articles, for instance, about Harvey in 2017, where we could make exactly the same statements, that it was the highest sea temperatures and the warmest ocean waters. But now it's even higher still. And so the potential for these storms not to just become intense, but to recover their intensity after they go through various natural cycles called eyewall replacement cycles. And in the past, you know, before about 2005, when the eyewall was replaced by another eyewall further out, it leads to a larger storm, but a weakening storm, and the storms typically didn't recover. But in more recent times, they recover quite well, and that means the storms are now bigger and they're longer lasting, and the fuel for the storm is indeed from the water vapor in the storm that leads to heavy rainfalls. And of course, the heavy rainfalls have major consequences with flooding, as we've seen with Helene in North Carolina.
According to a 1998 study by MIT climatologist Kerry Emanuel, Milton is nearing the upper limits of what Earth's atmosphere can generate with a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic Ocean. Are you able to explain this? What does this mean, to near the upper limits of what Earth's atmosphere can generate?
Yes, I know Kerry quite well, and I certainly respect what he's done. A hurricane, when you look at it from a satellite picture, say, the typical radius is 400 to 500 kilometers, but the circulation involved in the storm actually goes out about 2,000 kilometers. And the moisture that flows in the spiral armbands comes from, you know, about as far away as 2,000 kilometers. And so in the Gulf, it immediately means that some of the air that's flowing into the storm is coming from the land. And so that's an inherent limitation there. In the tropical western Pacific, or eastern Pacific, should I say, off the west coast of Mexico, that's not such a favored area. The strongest storms, the biggest typhoons, as they're called in the Western Pacific, are more likely to be a bit stronger than that, I would think. there's more potential, there's less obstacles in the way. The basic background sea temperatures and ocean temperatures are highest in that region. And, you know, these are the storms that attack China and Japan. Japan has had a couple of attacks just recently, and they all go in, also go into Vietnam with big consequences. So that's where the biggest action occurs. You know, the other area that has some influence on the Atlantic is in the tropical Indian Ocean, but there it tends, the cyclones, as they call them there, tend to occur in the northern hemisphere spring and the fall, because the monsoon at this time of year doesn't create favorable winds for typhoons to develop in that region. But, you know, when these storms occur, there's always a bit of competition for just where they occur. And if there's a lot of activity out in the Pacific, then there's typically less in the Atlantic, and a little bit vice versa. And this depends then on things like the El Nino phenomenon.
Hurricane Milton comes less than 2 weeks after Hurricane Helene hit the Gulf Coast as a Category 4 storm, killing at least 225 people across Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina. How would you explain these hurricanes hitting right after each other?
Well, it's not uncommon to have multiple storms. In 2004, there were four hurricanes that hit Florida, and they weren't the great big ones like the ones we're seeing now. In 2017, there was Harvey and Irma and Maria. Maria devastated Puerto Rico, you may recall. So they weren't quite in the same areas, but if you look, stand back far enough, the tracks are all in similar areas, but none of the tracks are in the same region. Helene went up into the western, northwestern parts of Florida and up into North Carolina, whereas this one is heading straight across Florida, going quite close to Orlando. I think the latest track puts it south of Orlando, so Orlando may well get drenched. You know, that's where Disney World is. And also Tampa Bay looked like a major target for a while, but I think, again, it may go south of here, which means it misses the worst storm surge along the coast. But nonetheless, they'll have heavy rains and no doubt flooding in local areas.
How do you expect the impact of Hurricane Milton will compare to Hurricane Helene?
Well, the impacts depend a lot on the preparation and what happens to the people there. Florida is a red state, so-called, or a right-wing state, and they tend to have minimal government. There are some shelters set up by the counties that are likely to be affected, but statewide, there's very little involvement of government in helping evacuations and setting up places for people to go. And so if people ride out the storm, they're much more vulnerable and apt to lose power, for one thing. They can lose water. I have colleagues in North Carolina, and they don't have access to email because all of the power is out. But one of my colleagues was able to get to a tower and sent me a very brief message, and he reckons that the loss of life will be quite a lot higher than the, so what I think it's about 250 they're reporting now. But there's so many people that don't even have access to water in the mountain areas. And he thought he was very lucky because he had a great big 2,000-gallon tank that provides water. And so there are all these kinds of consequences. And it relates to preparation, and a lot of it relates to drainage for water and flooding. And in Texas and in Florida, there has been very poor planning with regard to building better drainage systems and water management systems. And this is something where New Zealand should also play or be aware. And we've seen examples of that where we've had heavy rains and Cyclone Gabriel and so on. And, you know, the question is, where does the water go? And if you look historically, you can see old drainage systems that have been filled in and maybe not done adequately, and people are really living on what is a floodplain. That's certainly the case around Houston, for instance, and there are hundreds of thousands of people living on floodplains that, with a big hurricane like this, cause flooding. And so we'll have to watch the reports and see how much of that comes out, but of course it depends a great deal on just where these storms go.
That was Andre Faosor from the Yale Daily News speaking to Caden about recent events on the Yale campus and the political implications of Hurricanes Helene and Milton. After that, we heard from honorary academic at the University of Auckland and climate scientist Dr. Kevin Trenberth speaking to me about the science behind these hurricanes. That was State of the States.
Excuse me. I'm really rich.
That was State of the States.
Bye-bye.
How stupid is this?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.